Don't look now, but the holidays are going to sneak up fast. But it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you cannot find anywhere else. The website is packed with high-quality, unique gifts that are often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. For example, you know those plastic baseball helmets that you can put ice cream in? They actually make those in ceramic. So they're not just cheesy plastic throwaways. They're a more permanent bowl. Ooh, who doesn't want baseball helmet ice cream? Nom, nom, nom. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. From moms and dads, history buffs, diehard football fans, or mixologists, you'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you will not find anywhere else. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/Zabe. That's uncommongoods.com/Zabe for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. You know football and you pick winners all the time. So why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code CHARLIE, ZULU, ALPHA, BRAVO, ECHO to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Tuesday, November 4, 2025. Thank you for downloading. I don't know about you. I think it's all around the country. November 4th, second Tuesday in November. First Tuesday in November, I should say. Election Day. This being a very off-year election, but there are elections for governor and other races around the country. I know this. In Virginia, oh, I cannot wait for the ads to stop running on television. I don't know. I guess they must work. There must be proven, I suppose, historical studies on money spent on TV advertising, the gold standard in political races, as being effective and really a key factor in winning races. But from a practical standpoint, how does that work? What do you sit there as a voter and say, yeah, I'm not sure yet. Maybe I see this one more ad bashing the opponent of the person who wants me to vote for them. John Smith is evil. He wants to put your kids in cages. Don't let John Smith put your kid in a cage. Vote Johnson this November. Okay, great. And then another ad comes by. John Johnson thinks that the devil is going to come and bow your kids. Don't let John, like, or whatever. I'm making this up on the fly, obviously, but still. I want them to end. I need them to end. And I'm hoping it comes soon. So let's get to the Week 9 recap in the NFL. We'll run down the games real quick. The game on Sunday night, Commanders and Seahawks, was an absolute disaster on many fronts. Mostly because Jaden Daniels got hurt. A severely dislocated elbow that is going to keep him out for at least several weeks. They may have avoided further damage or serious damage. There was no fracture of his arm or anything like that. It looks like it could have been a lot worse. Could have been his knee. The way he went down looked like he was grabbing his knee. Instead, he was kind of pinning his arm underneath his leg to sort of brace it because he was in so much pain. After the game, Quinn was asked, why was he still in the game? It's like 35 to 14 at the time. Well, we're still trying to win the game. All right. What do you think your chances were with about 7 minutes to go? Doesn't matter. Playing football. He didn't say that, but that's the mentality. Monday, though, he reversed course and said, look, I haven't stopped thinking about it since the game ended, and that's 100% on me. Here's the thing about football coaches. They remain the most Neanderthal, backwards, gotta uphold the tough guy ethos coaches in sports. Someday, a coach in the NFL will come along who fully leans into load management for star players and pulls star players, quarterbacks most importantly, because what is this again? It's a television show about quarterbacks. They will pull their quarterbacks well before most coaches would do that. That's what this coach, whoever this coach is, that leans into load management, who understands that, well, yes, football is inherently dangerous, quite violent, and there is a fatalistic thinking of, well, an injury could happen at any time. Well, could happen at any time. But that doesn't mean you want to increase the amount of time there is for one horrible thing to end a season could happen. And that coach who leans into that, who's unapologetic, who pulls a quarterback like I would have pulled Daniels at 28 to nothing. Well, it's only halftime. You never heard of a four-touchdown comeback? You know, the Broncos came back to beat the Giants in Denver. Yeah, yeah, that's the outlier. That's the one in 1,000. You're going to really play for that with your franchise QB already in and out and in and out of the lineup this year with injuries? No. Pull him. Put Mariota in. And when the press afterwards, when the media hounds you, did you quit? Did you quit? That's the thing. It's the Scarlet Q. You didn't quit, did you? No, I didn't quit, but the game was lost. We lost the game because we couldn't cover shit. Also, it looks like their expensive bust, Marshawn Lattimore, unfortunately has torn his ACL and is also out for the rest of the year. Yeah, no, you got to just be able to, as a coach, say, no, he didn't quit. The game was lost. 28-0 at halftime. Can't cover anybody. Injuries, everything else, it didn't make sense to play Jaden. We need him healthy for the rest of the year. Well, you're quitting. You're quitting then. That's called quitting if you don't think you could win. Okay. And for those that say, well, what message does that send to the rest of the team? That they're expendable? Oh, you're not important enough to be pulled from the game. You're damn fucking right. That's what I would tell them. I'd say, yeah. Do you need me to draw up a chart that explains it? Someday a coach will do that, and they'll change the NFL because the NFL is a copycat league. There was a good article, I forget who wrote it, that chronicled all the times that starting quarterbacks, star players, were in games way too late for no reason whatsoever, sort of daring the fates to not catch a finger on a helmet or not step the wrong way in a pocket of grass or turf that does not flex or move like you think, and hearing ligaments snap, crackle, and pop. And it's crazy, because whether the game is already lost or already won, keep your best players out of live fire. If you've won a battle in war and there's only a few stray mortar shells still falling down, don't have your best guys sitting around walking outside of the foxhole assuming, well, probably not going to get hit. Get them safe. Move on to the next week. Commander season is probably Dunsky, given all the injuries. They've lost both defensive ends, Dietrich Wise, and his bookend. They have lost McLaurin. McLaurin's not going to play this week against Detroit. Detroit's pissed off. They lost to the Vikings. More on that with my guy Wolfie here in just a quick second. Lattimore now, obviously Jaden Daniels. It was bound to be a correction year given how they outperformed last year and how many miracle finishes. I think Commander fans just hoped it wouldn't be that much of a correction year. All right, quickly around the rest of the NFL, a couple of the stories. Also, I'll end today with, the mystery of Connor Stallions has been finally revealed. How did he get on the sideline for Central Michigan to steal signs purportedly for Jim Harbaugh? Also, I got my guy, a man about film, Matt Miller, joining us. So, Wolfie to talk Packers game, Matt Miller to talk throwback uniforms, the World Series, Isaiah Kiner falafel, and then the Stallion story before we're all said and done. Okay, let's get to the NFL scoreboard. This was a week. This was a week, wasn't it? In which the Kaleidoscope League, what you just saw, no longer exists. What you think you know was in fact a lie. What you were sure of just moments, nope, not the case. Bears beat the Bengals 42-47 with an amazing last-minute touchdown bomb to their rookie tight end, Colston Loveland. They were just trying to get in field goal position, and the Bengals defense could not stop them. They've got the worst, I believe the Bengals now have the worst yards allowed per game, second worst yards allowed per game in the Super Bowl era. And several of the offensive players on the Bengals were either biting their tongue or just outright hostile at questions about, so this defense having trouble closing games, aren't they? And they just didn't want to talk about it. Bears with the win. They're happy. They improved to 5-3. The Bengals fall to 3-6. Flacco with a monster game, 470 yards and 4 touchdowns in the loss. The Vikings over the Lions, 27-24. J.J. McCarthy getting it done. Throws for 2 touchdowns in the win. Ran for another as the Lions off a bye, catching a rookie quarterback the team was clearly afraid to play, or maybe he was injured, lose at home. Shocker. Lions fall to 5-3. Vikings are 4-4. Packers-Panthers, get to that in a second with my guy Wolfie. The Chargers outlast the Titans, closer than it should have been, 27-20, your final score in that one. As the Titans' miserable season rolls on, they're now 1-8, and they're 0-4 in Smashville. They probably won't win another game all year long. Patriots had quite the fight with the Falcons, but once again, Drake May is the real deal. Patriots improved to 7-2 now as the Falcons fall to 3-5 with Michael Penix Jr. rejoining the team. The Niners gut one out against the Giants, 34-24 to improve to 6-3. This is one of the best coaching jobs in the NFL in 20 years, what Shanny Jr. is saying. And I know, I have not been a Shanny Jr. fan over the years. They actually had a sequence the Niners did where they ran the ball 8 straight times. 8 straight times where they're like, well, should we do play action? We've kind of run it a few times in a row. I think 4, 5, 6, 7. Nah, just keep doing it until they stop it. The Giants couldn't stop it. Big Blue is 2-7. Brian Daboll is looking more cooked by the minute. The Niners are 6-3. And they may have lost their rookie defensive end as well to a torn knee. The Colts get stunned by the Steelers 27-20 as Danny Dimes turns into Danny Dumpit on the ground, that is. 5 turnovers from Daniel Jones, 6 as a team, and the Steelers defense that I called a wet cardboard box a week ago because that's what they looked like actually played phenomenal. Coverage was good on the back end, and the front 4 and the front 5 went nuts. TJ Watt with wreaking havoc in that game. Steelers now 5-3. Colts fall to 7-2. The Broncos over the Texans in a wild sort of trench warfare game. 18-15. Your final, Bo Nix was not very good. 18-37. Woof. Under 50%, but he had a long scramble late to set up the game-winning field goal. And that one, Denver's now 7-2. Texans fall to 3-5. The Jaguars beat the Raiders in an entertaining game of two teams that probably aren't very good, but the Jags are now 5-3 in this one as the Raiders fall to 2-6 following their bye week in which they didn't get much better. The Saints are terrible. Tyler Shuck, shucking oysters
got the start, his first start in the NFL. Not enough. 34-10. The Rams went crazy on them. Saints are 1-8. The Rams now improved to 6-2. The game of the week, which I caught pieces of, I was going to a memorial service for my sister-in-law's mom. That'd be my sister mother, my mother sister-in-law, whatever. Jerry, beautiful, beautiful woman. Rest in peace. I caught this game on my phone driving home, at least the last little bit of it. The Bills win 28-21, but it looked like they should have had the game locked up several times. And they kept giving the Chiefs life. And I just kept watching and going, oh, this is not going to happen. Please, God, this is not going to happen. Don't let the Chiefs wiggle off of this one. But the trend has held. The Bills and Chiefs, it's Buffalo in the regular season, Kansas City in January. And I'd say many people are going to bet a lot of money that we're going to see this matchup again in January. Bills improved to 6-2. The Chiefs fall to 5-4. And the Commanders got killed by the Seahawks 38-14. I got some thoughts on the uniforms that the Commanders wore, the old Redskin uniforms that we're calling the Super Bowl era uniforms. But the Seahawks looked great and unstoppable. Jackson Smith in Jigba. Just lighting people up. Scrubs you haven't heard of for the Seahawks, lighting people up. And the Seahawks throwbacks with the silver helmets and the lighter blue jerseys brings back all the good feels. Tonight, Cowboys, Cardinals, game's about to kick right now. I'm going to get to it. I don't know if ESPN's YouTube TV impasse has broken. I doubt it. Haven't checked social media in the last hour or so. I did discover, though, I do have a satellite box because I still have DirecTV. I've got the basic DirecTV subscriptions to the basic channels, including ABC, which is what this is going to be on, and ESPN, because my wife said, oh, I just would like to keep it. It's familiar, and all this streaming. I don't know how to work YouTube TV. I said, like, fine. Called DirecTV. I beat them up for a better price for a very limited service bundle, and, well, here we are. We're good to go. That game begins momentarily, and we'll have results to talk about tomorrow on the pod. Quick break, when we come back, a man about film who's also a man about uniforms, college football, and baseball. Matt Miller joins me, a man about film, to talk about Isaiah Kiner Falafel and how dumb he was as a designated runner in the most important moment in the World Series. You are listening to the Zabecast.
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie. Look, I know what you're thinking. Here's the bald guy talking about hair loss treatments. Well, the irony is not lost on me, folks. But here's the thing. Hims isn't just about hair restoration. They're tackling real health issues that some guys deal with but just don't want to talk about or wait in the doctor's waiting room. No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. They offer convenient access to prescription treatments with doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can stop hair loss and even regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments, no waiting rooms, no hoops, no hidden fees. Think of Hims as your digital front door for trusted treatments. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Zabe. That's Hims.com/Zabe for your free online visit. Go to Hims.com/Zabe. That's Hims.com/Zabe. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job post seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring Indeed is all you need. Pat Miller, a man about film, joining me now. I have to talk to him about three things, and three things only. You ready?
Absolutely.
College football, which you're always game for.
Hell yeah.
Uniforms and the Packers throwbacks.
Hell no.
And then baseball, because you love the game, and Isaiah Kiner Falafel's idiotic base running. Because I saw you on Twitter saying, oh, I have some thoughts about that slide.
So many mistakes were made there. And I was, as somebody who was like, the Brewers should pick up Isaiah Kiner Falefa.
So
is this live? Is this going?
I will use this. I will use this. Yes.
Okay. I should, yes. Hold on.
What?
I was ill. All right. Yeah.
I mean, why not? Why shouldn't I use it?
Because so far, I think I've been bad.
Yeah, but this is because we're getting the settings right on the microphones.
Yeah. That's what the people want.
Okay. All right. Matt Miller joins me now. I've missed him. He's a man about film. You can check out his blog at a man about film. I'm sorry, blog. Your Substack, right?
Back in 2005, you would have been point yes. on. Yes.
Exactly. What is the difference, Matt, between a Substack and a blog?
Better branding. No one wants to hear the word blog.
And it's a subscription. You subscribe for the Substack.
You can subscribe, but honestly, you can get it for free.
But when I say subscribe, sometimes you right. But sometimes you have a free subscription. It like to me, I understand Substack to be like you're opting into this person's content and their writing. You're
technically no. You can. Some people do have things behind walls and paywalls and stuff like that. I do not. I'm putting everything out there that I got. And if you want to throw me some money, that's great. And if you don't, feel free to
not. Please do. Please throw him some money there at A Man About Film. So
people, Matt, if you see me on the street, throw money at me, please.
Exactly. So Matt, having been with us on the show back when the show was a show. By the way, the new station 97.3, formerly the game. B93 now is your Christmas station in Milwaukee. Did you see their Christmas-fied logo?
No, already they're
They're it used to be Big 100, not Big 100. It used to be Big FM, the station right next to our station, our studio.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Christmas station starting in November, where it was all Christmas tunes for now. What do we got? 52 days until Christmas.
This is ridiculous. The jack-o'-lanterns aren't even gone yet. The Halloween movies are still in theaters as we speak.
Yeah, but you got to understand, these retailers, they need the money. They're like, we've got to make, 52 days to Christmas, my friend. There you go.
I can't hear Grandma run over by a reindeer that many times. I will kill myself.
You know what I did to my listeners yesterday was I just zapped them with, I went out with, at the end of the podcast, Mariah Carey. And All I Want
already.
You know why? Because there are pools people enter
to see who can go the longest without hearing it until Christmas.
And you have to avoid that for everybody.
Have you heard of those endeavors before?
No, I didn't think that was possible.
Well, it's hard. Like the survivor pool, it's hard to do. Anyway, so it's just surreal that the former station that I worked for is now a Christmas station. All your Christmas hits. Anyhow, I digress. Matt Miller is here. Those that know Matt from my show know that he loves college football, loves helmets, collectible football helmets, loves baseball because goes on a trip with his father every year to tour baseball stadiums around the country, minor league and major league.
Yep.
And also is a man who appreciates just, you know, the aesthetics of things. Let me get you on record. What'd you think of the Packers throwbacks?
I haven't liked them. And I'm not just saying that because they look like crap against the Panthers. But A, I like it when teams look like who they're supposed to be. And the Packers didn't look like the Packers out on that field. And I know people are like, oh, they wore that outfit in, you know, 1930s. But okay, all we have is like black and white photos for back then. Who cares? Right. And the leather helmet thing would have been cool if Illinois, the Fighting Illini, did not already wear basically that helmet type like 3 or 4 years ago. So it's kind of tread over ground already.
Okay, so you object to it on it's tired basis.
Most of the alternates we're seeing these days are retreads and stuff like that. The innovative ideas. I mean, the whiteout uniform can go too because every team is like, I don't know.
Has a whiteout, yeah.
White, like, you know, it was cool when the Bengals did it because, you know, white bangle, clever. But now every team is like, I don't know, we have no better ideas. White jerseys. I don't know. We have no better ideas. All black jerseys. I don't know. We have no better ideas. Tie-dye. You know, it's just a waste of everyone's time. We talked about this. Packers game was hideous. And I can't believe they ruined that for us.
Okay, right. Well, there's a lot of people out there saying they got what they deserve wearing their clown uniforms because they thought it was going to be an easy win. You know, they choose what dates to wear the uniforms for a reason. And they try to cherry pick the games they think are going to be wins. But in this league, Roger Goodell's $28 million billion circus, any week, any given day, any given Sunday, for any reason, teams can win. So they got their dick stepped on because, well, they weren't ready to play. But you got to put that result aside for a second. I just want to talk about the uniform.
100%, yeah.
I just think the combination of colors hit my
Well, so do I have a good team for you then? They're called the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. You should root for them.
and I do like that combination on Notre Dame, but I just felt like the Packers throwbacks were minty perfect as a faux back. I had to explain this to my 85-year-old mother, who is not a fan of these alternates. She's like, I don't just wear the ones you're going to wear. It's ridiculous.
She's got great taste. Good job.
Good job, Mom. And so I had to say, well, it's a faux back, Mom, because it's a homage to the 1920s. But because it's hard to replicate muddy sweater as a uniform some 100 years later, that they had to take some liberties. And also, they were replicating leather helmets.
Is that technically a faux back though? Because a faux back is a true, they never wore this before thing. So like the Milwaukee Admirals here in town, they have a faux back where it's the logo of the refrigerator and it's designed to look like it was made in the 1940s.
But they never wore it.
Never existed. No.
Okay.
And there's a lot of teams that do that kind of like, oh yeah, this logo looks like it was made in the old days, but in actuality, they never wore anything like this whatsoever.
Okay. Well, I thought the overall presentation was great. I think it was better than the other Packer.
Well, that was because they couldn't wear the helmet. They had to wear the like fake, happy birthday.
I launched balloons because of my air quotes. If I do this, I think it's fireworks.
The computer detected sarcasm and did balloons. They used to have to only wear the one helmet in the NFL. Yes. They had that one shell rule. So they had to wear like basically the Packers shell, which didn't match history and looked like a naked Packers helmet.
So the all forest green, I think it's a forest green, the green jersey, green pant with the yellow numbers, yellow stripes, that had the plain yellow shell because it was under the one shell regime.
Yes.
If they changed that shell to something brownish, would you like that one?
I'd probably like it a little more. Like, I like the artistry of the helmet. I like the handcrafted look of it, but it looks busy on the field. There's too much going on top of their heads. A helmet is supposed to be clean. A helmet is supposed to be a clear logo, maybe a stripe if you're feeling risky, if you're feeling sexy. But other than that, now they're adding all this weird stuff. The Nike arrow, where they've got the weird Seahawks texture that, like, makes the arrow. They got the matte helmet, which I am arguing that is the worst part of that Steelers look from 2 weeks ago. Was the, the matte helmet. yellow helmet that made them look like a rec league team even more so than the stupid neon pennies.
I have some friends who are hashtag matte finish for life.
Well, and I'm hashtag Matt hates Matt.
That's what I thought. I'm a gloss guy always. I'm a gloss guy with metal flake to make it sparkle even more.
Again, I have a team for you. They're called the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Well, you know that the Packers and a number of other teams have what is called metal flake in their helmet.
Yes.
Which is tiny little metal that is you can't really see it from afar. You have to hold the helmet in your hands to see it, but it lends to the most glorious gleam.
It gives
a shimmer. Marty Schottenheimer once said, "There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam."
It's just, so, I'm so frustrated. Like, I was one of those people who was like, man, bring back the throwbacks. Let the Broncos wear their appropriate throwback helmets. Let all these guys wear those old schools. And now with the weird color rush and the weird rivalry alts that the teams don't even wear against one another and all the other alternates, it's too much. The NFL has gone too far. Go figure. Nike swooped in and ruined everything for everybody. And now nothing's special anymore.
Okay, well, don't be so negative, Nelly. The Broncos have worn, now that the one shell rule's been revoked, they've
and it
worn.
Looks great. Looks yes. great. Right. But now that every team has 45 helmets, it's not special. Yeah. And remember when Oregon wore like weird helmets and you were like, oh, that's cool. But now that's every week with Oregon. Now that's every week with football teams where it's like the Denver Broncos. Oh, they've got their normal helmet.
I know.
They've got their whiteout helmet and they've got the throwback helmet.
It's too much. Many. Speaking of helmets, last night the Commanders got their asses handed to them by the Seahawks. Sam Darnold was
cost them an arm, literally.
Sam Darnold, 16-16 in the first half. Jaden Daniels in the game way too late. Got his arm nearly ripped off. MRIs, by the way, today are negative on a fracture, so that's good for him. But it's negative. Jacked up.
Sure,
it's
a several week fracture.
No, no fracture. They got to see if there's any more ligament damage. Anyway, the point is, the Commanders wore what they're calling their Super Bowl era jerseys and pants, which is code for, we can't say the R word, Redskins, but it had the taco holder W of the Commanders on the helmet.
With the appropriate stripe, right? The thick, big stripe in the middle. Yeah.
80s stripes down the middle, thick 80s stripes down the pants. I said on Twitter, and you have to have been a fan when I was growing up as a teenager of the Redskins to know this, but I said, look, seeing these uniforms now run around out on the field, and they were kind of running around randomly because, Jesus, they stunk last night.
Bad night.
I said seeing them run around was like having the warmest hug from the oldest, dearest friend. But when you looked into the friend's eyes, meaning the helmet, all you could see was cold, dead eyes. And people love that tweet. They go, this is it. Like, this is exactly it.
It was like an AI deep fake. Like, it was like a Sora created version of your grandfather. And you're like, yeah, you look like my dead grandpa. Yeah. And you're saying words that he might have said, but I know your code. Like, I know that I am looking into Tom Hanks and the Polar Express right now. Like, that is what you were looking at last night. And I think they're playing a silly game with the, like, oh, we're not the Redskins anymore, but we're going to, like, dress up as much as we can, but we're going to put the weird W on it. So that
what they're trying to do, Matt, they're trying to creep up to it. They're trying to sneak up to it. And maybe one day, after they've worn these Super Bowl era jerseys and pants long enough with the taco holder on the helmet, maybe one night they come out and they've got the old Indian head logo, which was designed by Chief Blackie Wetzel, I believe, of some Indian nation tribe. And then they could just go, oh, what? Oh, my God, it's crazy. I can't believe that old logo's on there. And they don't say Redskin. They don't put that word up on the scoreboard. And they just act dumb because they've been creeping up to it.
It's very sweet of you to think that's going to happen, Zabe. I'm sure Santa's going to bring you a pony, too, down the chimney this year. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm saying it would be amazing if that was the case.
Are they ever going to wear the Florida State arrow that they wore for that one year? That kind of – didn't they wear that as like a throwback one year?
They did, right before Lombardi got there. They wore that for a couple years. That actually probably wore it for a few more years than that. But yes, that was also a similar design. That was actually designed for quite a while. They also had a helmet that had a feather, a single feather that went up the back.
Yes.
Did you ever see that?
That was cool. Would they go back? Would the NFL let them do the circle with the feather on the side of it?
Feathers?
But with the R in the middle. Would they let them do that if it doesn't have the caricature on it?
You know who would design that helmet? Vince Lombardi. He wanted to mimic Green Bay. And so that was his design. It was not popular with a lot of people, but I loved it. And when they would wear their Rhodes, they would have the yellow pants, white top, red helmet with that. Well, no, they didn't have the red helmet.
Didn't they wear helmet for some
The
years?
Yellow helmet. Sorry, yeah. Yellow helmet. Yellow helmet, yellow pants, red jerseys. Can't lose.
Just a bunch of uniform dweebs talking on mic.
We really are.
I spent this whole World Series being like, these are two great looks right now. I'm so happy I'm looking at these two uniforms right now. I think the Blue Jays finally got their look right again after years of kind of looking like crap. Those black ears, the Roy Halladay ones.
Yeah, those are terrible. The Dodgers uniforms are a goddamn classic. They are so iconic. They are so pure. They are so clean. It's just too bad that they are a completely overbuilt, illegal team.
That they're an absolute nightmare ruining the sport I love.
They're wrecking it. Dave Roberts said, they say we're wrecking the sport. Let's wreck it even further by winning the World Series. Well, they did. They did by a tiny little bit. So on the Isaiah Kiner falafel play down Isaiah Kiner falafa, right?
I think we got you there. I think we got you there. If he had slid in right, we would pronounce his name right.
Okay. You had the biggest objection to his slide. Tell
Many
me.
Objections. Objection one, don't slide. Every little leaguer is taught you don't actually go into the base faster sliding, just run through the base.
What about the argument of rarely do you run through home plate? And so therefore his instincts kicked in.
Yeah. So if that's the argument, if the argument is, hey, heat of the sport, you're going to slide in the plate. Why in God's name are you sliding in feet first, which is the slower way to slide into a plate. And then also a less exact way to slide into the plate. Cause you can't control your feet as well as you can control your arms sliding into the plate.
Right?
You get more momentum. You can actually, imagine if you got a little bit more like just hands out rather than like his feet awkwardly, it just blows my mind that he botched that play so hard across everything. Did you see the replay too, where he's like 3 feet max away from third base when that play starts?
Okay, we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to that in a second. But
I'm just a bottle of rage right now.
But do you know for a fact that sliding head first is in fact faster to the base? Has that been proven by either the late Rob Brenkus, may he rest in peace, Super Sky Point to sports science, committed suicide, very sad. Seemed like a nice guy. Obviously had a lot of things going on in his head. Or by Mythbusters, did they ever try to put some science to it?
I did a lot of research, and by research, I mean I Google searched fastest way to slide into a base. And everything I saw said the hands first, the head first slide is faster than the feet first slide, which makes sense. You're able to push off when you're running. You push off frontwards. You can't push off and then slide in with your feet. You know, that's a finesse slide. And I wonder if part of it too is like you're coached out of the head first slide a lot now because that's how you bust up fingers. That's how, you know, that's how arms and fingers get hurt, but even when you have
problems. That's why these pussies have sliding gloves now to protect their sweet little sausages.
So on then their why hands. Didn't our boy Isaiah Kiner Falefa, for the life of me, slide for into home plate hands first? We should have had a great highlight there of him diving, you know, dramatically into home plate
to win safe. The World fucking Series.
And instead we get this dweeby doing a little pop-up slide, just a little like, and he just like walks off like he knows he's out. My dude,
he didn't even argue for it. Why didn't he lobby for it? You know, it was close enough that Canadian kindness.
It's the Canadian, you know, friendliness. He didn't want him to cause a scene.
Okay, so a couple things here. One, if you mentioned the head first slide, how about Vladdy when he slid head first against the Yankees in that play where he launched himself from an absurd length up the third base line? Now that's how you sell out to get home. Okay, yeah. So that's number one. He did it. Isaiah Kiner Falefa did not. Secondly, the lead. The lead was
hit.
Not just the primary lead, but what is called the secondary. And this was a term I was unfamiliar with. Did you know? Oh, I hit the balloons again. Damn it. Yeah, turn that off.
With computers, the Dodgers fan.
I'm sure you being a baseball guy knew about the so-called secondary lead.
Yeah. When the pitch comes, you get a little bonus hop or two. Yeah.
Right. So primary lead is just you're off the bag to get a head start, waiting for the pitcher to not pick you off. Then once you see the pitchers going to the plate, you take a secondary lead of a couple more steps. Well, get this. The Athletic looked up the stats. Do you know that his primary lead was ranked like 342nd out of 360 postseason leads in length from third base? He was the
Sam Houston State of postseason base leads.
And his secondary lead, according to StatCast, was even lower of the 360 times a runner had been on third. And so he did literally three things wrong. And they argued, the Blue Jays argued, no, this is how we wanted to coach it. We told him we can't afford to get picked off. We can't afford to get you doubled up on a line drive.
That's a very generous manager. That's what that is. Because also, this dude was the pinch runner. He was subbing in for a guy with a much better bat. They removed the guy, the Bo Bichette, right? They removed him from the game to put in Isaiah Kiner Falefa. And your job was to run the bases well to win the World Series.
Right.
And this motherfucker couldn't do it four ways straight.
Exactly. I would also love to know the odds of line drive double plays. It seems like you're really, really guarding against a low probability outcome.
Yeah. Does this happen if the Barger play doesn't happen at second the night before, basically?
That's a great question. I think they were haunted by that.
I think they were a little gun shy.
They were spooked by that. And so, yeah, it just, but the crazy thing is, and you know me in replay, it was so close. I believe that if you could somehow remove digitally all the snowplowed dirt under Isaiah Kiner Falefa's shoe, you would see that he probably nicked the edge of the base one microsecond ahead of the cleats of Will Smith landing.
Circle the dust and make it go away.
I believe you can't prove it, but I believe that's what could have been proven. Let's say it was one frame clearer that he probably beat the tag. Would the powers that be have had the stones to end it all and pull the plug on the Dodgers' $330 million payroll team to declare the World Series via replay? That would have been the most fascinating thing to watch if it was one click closer.
And I have to say, as a fan, is that how I want the World Series to end?
Even as
a guy who was like all in on the Blue Jays, who was like, please, dear God, let the Blue Jays win this World Series for, you know, in the name of God and all that is holy. do I want them to win the World Series, A, on a replay thing, and B, on like a real goofball replay thing where it's like he was clearly out. The throw beat him by a million miles, but because yep. Will Smith's foot was like a few centimeters off the plate for a hot second in a natural human reaction,
right?
That is what loses them the World Series. You know, I think I'd rather have the Dodgers win the World Series legitimately
than
the Blue Jays win on this weird, well, technically Will Smith's foot was off the base and he got in there just in time. Like, that's not satisfying to me on any level, but maybe I'd be saying that differently if the Blue Jays, you know, come out on the other side of it and as the winners, and I don't have to worry about a baseball strike in a year from now.
Yeah. Well, the problem also is that with more cameras and with better frame rates and super high definition, we're at the point of counting angels on the head of a pin when it comes to replay. We're looking at things so closely, it's crazy.
And we're not leaving room for like obvious, the obvious stuff, like the dumb, like, oh, did the ball jostle? Did the ball shift in the guy's possession? And it's like, well, we are trying to manage intent. We are trying to decide things that we can't even know. Like, how do we know what possession looks like on a football catch or, you know, all these minuscule, bizarre details? We're here to have fun. We're here to watch sports. You know, am I here? Do we watch sports to watch, you know, centimeters of a foot off the base? I know, again, like that's any play, but anybody watch that play with their bare eyes would have said, boom, that guy's out at home plate. We move on. We move forward. I'm glad that in the end of the day, we did.
Right. Because sports was meant to be. That's basically what I see. As refereeing, this is basically what I see. I basically see a tackle. I basically see an interception. It was never meant to be so finite and precise. It was never meant to be codified in the rule book as, well, you need this and then that, but if part A and part B don't match, blah, blah, blah.
It's an entertainment product.
Yes, it was always meant to be, yeah, that's basically a catch. But television ruined it for all of us because we're sitting at home screaming and pointing at the screen, snapping our fingers like Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh, whoo, that's wrong right there.
Well, did TV, so
that has ruined everything.
Or did gambling too? Is there so much money to be made and lost by these results?
No,
that because we have to be right on these things now, as opposed to, oh, you know, if that went wrong, well, now I've lost money. Now there's not trust in the game and stuff like that.
No, the point is the money that in gambling, it's a left pocket, right pocket thing. It's one set of degenerate hoopleheads losing, another set of degenerate hoopleheads winning momentarily on one game, and they're going to gamble more that night, and they're going to gamble more the next day. So it's just, I don't think it's gambling. I think it's just television got so good. The replays got so good. The notion of leaving an officiating injustice to stand became too unpalatable to some people who want perfection. They're like, well, we should clean it up if we can. So
yeah, it's the uncanny valley thing with special effects. If people don't know this thing with there's a reason why Polar Express looks so creepy to people, not to bag on Polar Express, but 'tis the season, according to 97.3. But the closer special effects look to human, the more inhuman it looks to our eyes. Because that's why Avatar looks realistic to us, because they're not human technically. There's enough of a distance there where it's like, those are aliens. Whereas you look at Polar Express, you're like, that looks just close enough to be human that my brain starts getting really picky about what I'm looking at, and it hates it and it doesn't like it. It clicks like a primal part of your brain that's like, I don't believe that's real. Get it out of here.
Will we ever get to the point where computer generated animation is indistinguishable from genuine human faces?
I mean, we're seeing some of it now with the Sora and the ChatGPT and the AI creations out there. A lot of people are getting duped by a lot of this stuff. And at first look, if you're not
because they're lazy. I'm talking about what you said, which is the more realistic the computer animation on facial features, the less it feels human. You're saying that final gap will finally be bridged at some point, technology-wise?
I mean, we're seeing it. You're seeing like the deepfake stuff. People are getting fooled by this stuff. It's out there, and some of it's a lack of effort part, but of it is people, you know, choosing to see what they want to see with a lot of this stuff. But I mean, we're getting pretty close to that place where it's going to get really hard to start telling the difference between, okay, am I looking at something real or not? And the difference in the case of something like the Polar Express, we know it's not real because we walked into a movie theater. Sure. It's the setting that is telling us. The context clues are like, I am watching a fictional kids movie. Right. Whereas if you're scrolling Twitter or, you know, and all of a sudden you see this video that looks like me and Zabe talking on camera.
Yeah. But
I don't know, like analyze it a little bit more. And Zabe, you know, Zabe loves replay in this video. Well, this video can't be real.
Oh, listen, I've already prepared my defenses for the inevitable deepfake AIs. I'm like, oh my God, that donkey was a farmer's, and he said I had full permission. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't believe everything you see.
I'm just paying someone to be my alibi. Like every day, someone just walks around behind me for $20 a day. And I'm just like, you just be where I am. Yeah. So that way, when people are like, oh my God, I saw this video of you killing a guy, I'll be like, nah. Leonard here tells me that I was at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let me end on this. College football, I love that you love it so much. Here's what's funny. Nobody breaks stories quite like college football Twitter or college football Reddit. Hugh Freeze gets whacked at Auburn on Sunday. But the one who broke the story was not all your high-priced college football reporters with the connections and the pedigree and the networks behind them. No. It was somebody on Reddit who noticed that Hugh Freeze's wife's standing 1:10 p.m. tea time at a local country club had suddenly been replaced by some other guy nobody knew. And they're like, why is Mrs. Freeze not golfing today? And that's when the word leaked out. How beautiful is college football Reddit?
That's also the most SEC way for the news to come out, that it's a golfing appointment that, like,
of course, yes, with his lovely wife, his wife, who
pimento cheese dip seemed a little off this week, therefore I think he's out of town.
his wife, who stood by him during the whole prostitute scandal. So talk about the old adage, I'd rather be inside the tent pissing out than outside of the tent pissing on it. That's the decision Mrs. Freeze made. So, yeah, working on their marriage. All right, anything else for you today? I'm looking forward to talking movies on a future appearance. I am sort of kind of getting excited for the Blade Runner reboot. I'm sorry, no, the Running Man.
Yeah, I'm very into the Running Man reboot. That's the one with Glenn Powell, directed by the guy who did Baby Driver, who did The World's End, who did Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz. Good director. And that's the kind of movie that they should be remaking. The original Running Man is not a very good movie. The Schwarzenegger, Richard Dawkins one, or not Richard, Dawson. Yeah. Richard Dawson one. It's a great premise. It totally holds up. Like remake that movie 40 years later for a modern audience with modern concerns about technology and entertainment. Boom. You've got a hit on your hands. Hopefully people show up for a movie for adults. That seems to be a big question mark for most of them these days. Just ask Bruce Springsteen. Right. But yeah, Running Man looks awesome.
You do know that Richard Dawson was the goat of Family Feud hosts.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah.
There's a couple others that did it, but nobody did it like old Tricky Dick Dawson.
Smooch Swindler Richard Dawson. You think I wasn't watching Prime Game Show Network as a kid? You think I wasn't watching Card Sharks?
Didn't know, Miller. You're a lot younger than I am. How old are you?
I am 31? Spiritually 77 years old.
What are you? What's your chronological age?
The birth certificate says 35.
35. Okay. All right. Very good. A Man About Film on Twitter at A Man About Film, and his Substack as well, A Man About Film. Mr. Miller, great to have you on for the first time on the Zabecast. There'll be many more, and we will talk to you next time.
Zabe, I am beyond honored. Thank you for making the space for me here.
No problem. Thank you, my man. Okay, from one friend of the family guest to another friend of the family guest, it is great to talk to my guy, Brian Wolf. All right, my guy Wolfie is joining us now here on the Zabecast, manager of Natty Oaks and Henry Flocks in West Allis, Wisconsin. Don't call it the Dirty Stallus, right, Wolfie, unless you are from West Allis. Then you're not allowed to say that. I learned that the hard way because I called it the Dirty Stallus, and there was an angry email to the station going, he can't say that. He ain't from here.
Well, you would get an angry email even if you said nice things about West Allis.
Isn't that rough of a suburb at times?
No, that's just how people react to you.
No, that's just how people react to me. They're prone to come at me. Don't come at me, bro. So yesterday during the Packer game, oh my God, we were having a time, me, you, and Vinny just going off. And you are at wit's end with Matt LaFleur. What is the most annoying thing about him right now as the head coach of your beloved Packers?
The lack of improvement over seven years now. It's been the same problems. He can be a really good play caller, and he can be a really good game manager. But he doesn't do either well when he's trying to do them both. And and I don't know why he's putting himself in that position.
He's looking more and more like a coordinator every day, isn't he?
Well, he calls really good offensive games at times. That's when we're at our best with him as the head coach, is when he comes up with a real great game plan offensively and then puts it into place. But even in those games, that's where you see the timeout issues. Are we going for it? Are we not going for it? Because the game manager goes on the back roll, right? He can't do both at the same time.
Right.
Because his offensive coordinator mindset is generally more aggressive, and his game manager is the opposite.
Isn't that funny? Because
When he's in game manager mode, that's when you see us slow it down with 2 minutes and three timeouts and the Carolina Panthers on the other side. What are we worried about them getting the ball with 35 seconds? What are we worried about for that?
That was weird at the end. The way that Greg Olsen positioned it on TV was, oh, he's daring him to use his rookie kicker with no time left to win the game. And I'm screaming at the TV set saying, Wolfie's saying, of course he's fucking daring him. It's a tie game in overtime if he misses. There's no risk to do that.
Well, and I was referring to the first half.
Oh, you're talking first half. Okay.
We had the ball, and we're just like, let's see if we can run it nine times and not score. What was the goal of that whole two-minute offense?
Right.
It made no sense.
Well, and the thing is, he had a phrase early on in his tenure as coach of all gas, no fucking brakes, right?
He said that I've never seen it. I've never seen it. Even in the Dallas game when we're up, we took our foot off the gas, took the starters out, had to put them back in. So I don't know when that's actually been the case, but yes, it's a phrase.
It isn't getting any better, the game management aspect of it. And the timeout thing has been an absolute pain in my ass, as it has friend for anyone who understands the value of second half timeouts that are 40-second game coupons. To watch them decide to go for it on 4th and 8 at the 12, I want to say, and then run out of time and then use a timeout and then nearly throw a 105-yard pick six. Thank God that DB has butter hands. And I think there was 7 minutes left in the game. So sure, settling for a 3 down 7 is not very satisfying, but it's the percentage play. Using a timeout when you're trailing like that and you're going to need every single one of them to bend time late, you can't use it there if you didn't get your play in. And let's also get back to this. How often have we seen the Packers with LaFleur have problems getting the fucking play in on time?
Well, and that's what I'm pointing to. And what I think the problem is he's so in game manager mode at that point that's where we're not getting the offensive play caller that we need. Because that third and three call was atrocious.
Of course.
If that's your third and three call, like
the what was that? Like, hey, wait, remind me which one that was. Because I've seen so many bad third down calls from LaFleur. They're starting to melt together.
The screen to the left to put him in fourth and eight.
Yes, the third and three that led to the fourth and eight.
You knew it was either a screen to the left or a screen to the right because those are the options. But his play calling in that setup, because he's so focused on game managing, he's like, we're going to go for this here, that you called two crappy plays in a row. I mean, nothing was open on the fourth down play, and Love ran around like crazy, kept it alive, just to point over in a direction, throw it up in the air towards Dobbs, who thought the point meant, hey, we're done here.
He thought something, that's for sure. He kind of quit on the play. Luckily, do you think – I looked at the All-22, Wolfie. I thought maybe if he made one cut, the DB could have gone all the way. Maybe not sure, though. Might have been tackled at the 50.
I don't know how fast he is. I know Dobbs wouldn't have caught him.
Not with that giant couch cushion helmet.
It's got to be harder to get moving with that thing on your head.
It's got to be.
Golden can't get open deep since he's got one.
Yeah. Well, so wait, Golden got one this week, didn't he? That's new, right?
Yeah, we finally took 8 weeks to throw him a deep ball.
Right.
Okay. They told us he was fast.
Exactly. So anyway.
But only Christian Watson gets deep balls, so I don't know what that.
So here's the thing. Here is the other debate that raged on another separate text string that you were not a part of regarding LaFleur. One of the guys on the string, who I'm not going to name, JB, was being a real contrarian, going, okay, fire him tomorrow. Who are you going to get? Call John Gruden. Maybe you can get him hired, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I go, look, JB, don't be that guy. You're avoiding the larger narrative, which is that it is becoming hardened and more clear every day that LaFleur ain't it. It doesn't mean he has no good qualities. It doesn't mean that he is not to be credited for his winning record so far. It does not mean that he might be good in a second go-round somewhere else in the NFL. It just means more people are coming around to, Jesus, he can't pull the right strings and push the right buttons against Carolina in November. He'll never do it in January in a stakes game. Is that a fair assessment?
I think fans are feeling that way. I think everybody's getting frustrated, has been frustrated. We're seeing the same thing over again. And then in the presser, we're seeing the same thing over again. And nobody's pushing him in the, you know, he gives a little spiel.
Yeah,
they let him off the hook every single week.
It's a very congenial beat up in Green Bay. And they're nice guys, and they work hard. But it's such a remote location. It's such a small market. Midwest nice is such a real thing, Wolfie. It's the softest coverage of any NFL team out there. LaFleur would be being savaged in New York. I mean, back tabloid headlines, 48-point bold.
Yeah, and it'd be a problem. The other thing is those guys are playing to get information for the upcoming games, right? They're not trying to be on the bad side and get away from getting that kind of coverage, which is fine. I get that you're trying to do that. But at some point, we have to hold them to some accountability as far as, hey, Matt, you keep saying the same thing, and we keep getting the same thing.
That's on me. We've got to be better.
When do the changes come?
Right. When do we see something different, actually? So,
well, if one of them could just respond and say, we agree, when is that coming?
We agree. When will you be better?
Right.
But you got to realize he is quite confident in himself. And he's quite chesty about the one time we had him on the radio show and I asked him about the timeout situation. He was like, well, why don't you give me an example that you're talking about spending timeouts to avoid 5-minute delay of games. Because my feeling is when trailing in the fourth quarter, 8 minutes or less to go, or just any time, a 5-minute delay game is never worth a 40-second time coupon. Never. But his saying was, well, I could see the play was not going to work. And my counter to him, even though I didn't get to say it on air, Wolfie, was, well, you don't know who's going to slip. Or you don't know which safety for their team is going to run the wrong assignment. Because you look at it and say, wow, they're in cover two and running a cover two beater, and they're going to be right there. They might be. They might not.
I'm pretty sure in the Arizona fourth down play that everybody gave him credit for, in the press conference, didn't he say that he had the wrong play in? That was the wrong play? Yes. They ran the wrong play, and it was the perfect play for that situation?
Right.
So maybe don't call the timeout, because sometimes the wrong play works.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this team has bigger problems, which is Tucker Kraft is out for the season now. Did the MRI come out today? I didn't see it.
Yeah, they said that he's done.
ACL and MCL?
I just saw ACL. I could be wrong on that. Okay. I was working, so I didn't look fully. I saw that he was out and moved on with my day.
So your boy Vinny swears that Musgrave is now going to become the star. Musgrave was...
Oh, Musgrave's a dude.
You think he's the
Musgrave's
dude still?
The guy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but here's the deal. Musgrave was drafted as the pass catcher. Kraft was drafted as the blocker. And then it flipped. Yeah. Are you just saying that because somehow Kraft was more dependable or filled in? Because Musgrave got hurt, didn't he, for a stretch last year, and that let Kraft emerge? That, you know, Musgrave is a better pass catcher, and if he's used in the same capacity with the same routes as Kraft, oh boy, you better pick him up in fantasy if you haven't already.
I mean, he caught 4 balls yesterday, did he not? Or 3. He immediately got all those targets.
Right.
Immediately got the targets. He's faster. I know that. He falls down after he catches the ball, which isn't ideal, but you know.
Isn't
ideal. We gotta start somewhere.
Well, Kraft is the ultimate yak king. He's the best, most exciting ride post catch since George Kittle in his prime, right?
Yeah, oh, he's a truck. I mean, he gets the ball, and guys are like, oh, crap. You know, business decisions happen all over the field.
Right. So the other thing is you hate Dobbs, and I was trying to explain this to somebody today. Your Dobbs hate is because what? Let me see if I can accurately relay it. I said, yeah, my boy Wolfie hates Dobbs because even though he's the most reliable hands on the team and he's making a lot of contested catches – the reason he's making contested catches is because he's never really open.
Correct. He's never open. There's always two guys there. Every ball he catches is a great catch because there's two guys draped on him all the time. I appreciate the work he does. I think he could be a good piece to this team. We treat him as if he's Devontae Adams.
Right.
We throw the ball to him all the time. We're throwing go balls to him now. I'm sorry, but if you've watched the Packers in the last 4 years, is Dobbs not the least athletic of those 5 wide receivers?
Yes. And he has that troubling incident from 2 years ago when he went AWOL on the team and they were worried for his safety and had to go knock his door. Never a good thing, right?
Yeah. There's things I don't want to say in the public.
And then there's
a situation.
And then there's the couch cushion. I mean, the guy's had a lot of concussions. Maybe the couch cushion works. I'm very dubious of its merits, but okay. But yeah. So you think if we clear if they let him go after this year, because there's a decision due on him, right? Is he an unrestricted free agent after the year?
I believe he should be.
Okay.
He might be restricted.
Free agents. Packers free agents 2026. All right. Let's take a look at this right here. Spotrac.com. By the way, go to Henry Flocks in West Dallas. It's a great steakhouse. It's a affordable family-style steakhouse. Eric Gitter, darken the door. with his girlfriend on Saturday using coupons, taking negative value out of Wolfie's pocket. But that's okay. It's a delicious steakhouse. We had a nice holiday dinner there last year. We'd like to do the same thing again this year. And then, of course, Natty Oaks, where my boy Josh goes to get his big old bowl of chili every Friday because he loves chili. Okay, NFL free agents, all teams. Click down. Let's see. Packers. By the way, how's the division looking right now?
I mean, we're on the top of it.
I didn't ask the standings. I said, how's it looking to you? The Lions lost, which was shocking to everybody. J.J. McCarthy looked okay, but I caution people, he completed 14 passes and had 162 yards. I think that McCarthy now has a mark of one of a handful of guys to start three games in the NFL and not crack 180 yards passing.
Did you see his post-game locker getting the game ball?
No.
Oh, yeah, look that up.
Why?
Okay. I mean, he's him, apparently. He was in a trance. He was something just – he was feeling himself after that
McCarthy
win.
Looking
it
like
– It was a good win.
McCarthy looking like an absolute serial killer post-game in the locker room from Reddit. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, people were clapping me going, hey, maybe now you'll believe in J.J. McCarthy. And I'm like, don't look at me. It's the Vikings who were not believers in him. They rolled Carson Wentz out last week with one arm to get killed. If they believed in McCarthy, well, he was hurt with an ankle. Fuck, get out of here. You taped that thing up last week if they wanted to.
That team has so many weapons. They're scary. I love their roster aside from McCarthy, and I think they do too.
Yeah, when they get the right trigger man there. And of course, the guy that let go, absolutely dealing with the Seahawks. So yeah.
Pretty all right.
All right. Yeah. So are you more worried about the Vikings or the Lions right now? As a Packer?
The Lions.
Still the Lions. Okay.
Yeah, the Lions are better overall, more consistent, more ready to compete at that high level.
All right, Dobbs is an unrestricted free agent, as well as Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt, and Sean. Let's see. Here's the notables. Walker, Wyatt, Romeo Dobbs, Wicks is an RFA. And, you know, you and I are big on Wicks Island. We love Wicks.
He's going to have a great career somewhere.
Somewhere else.
He's going to go somewhere and get the ball a ton, and because he's always open.
Yeah. Are you feeling anything on the Bears right now?
The Bears are tough. They have pieces. I'm not sure how I feel about Ben Johnson. Just haven't seen enough. I know how he feels about himself.
Oh, he feels very highly of himself.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think the two Bears games coming up here in December, the 7th home and then the 20th at Chicago, those are going to be, I think, two electric games.
Our schedule is ridiculous. Broncos, division, Ravens. It's nuts.
So here it is.
They have a stretch.
They have a stretch here. So Philly on Monday night. Let's hope the ESPN thing will be solved by then on YouTube TV. Then
I'll be there. I don't know.
You're going to that game?
Yeah.
Are you prepared for the savages who will invade the filthy Eagle fans? Are you ready?
Sure. What are they going to do?
What are they going to do? Just keep your head on a swivel.
They're you know, 90. Okay. I'm not going to Philly. I'm going to Lambeau.
Okay. You know what? We'll have you report back and see how it goes. Then they're home against Minnesota. That it's the whole division right after that. So after New York, it's Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago. Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, bing, bang, boom. With at Detroit as the road game in that. It's a home game sandwich, Minnesota, Chicago at home, Detroit on Thanksgiving, think that's on Thanksgiving, the 27th. There's your sandwich right there. Then Denver at altitude, tough game. Then Chicago, Baltimore, and at Minnesota to end the year.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's not easy. And the easier games, luckily, they've either won them or tied them, except for Carolina and except for Cleveland. But they're going to look back, I think, on the early part of the schedule and kick themselves for not beating both Cleveland and Carolina and Dallas. I know it's very homerific to go, they should be undefeated, but they really should. They threw the Cleveland game away. They threw the Dallas game away. And even this game, they kind of got beat, Wolfie, but they should have won.
Well, maybe that's where I'm looking at the schedule wrong. I'm like, oh, good, they're playing good teams, so we'll play good football too.
Okay. I mean, that's always possible. I need to get your thoughts real quick before I let you go. The penalty on Carolina for excessive celebration because of a literal Key and Peele skit. The Hingle McCringleberry, three pumps is a penalty. Two pumps of your pelvis is okay. They reenacted that, and the stupid crew chief, Lan Clark, threw a flag. That guy should be fired, in my opinion.
Apparently he didn't know the rule is three. I don't know where else to go with that. It's three. It shouldn't have been a penalty. It's established. There's precedent.
Well, not only is there precedent, but who fucking cares? It's literally, like, of all the things to be policing. I mean, look, it's the NFL. It's the No Fun League. So I suppose it's no different than, oh, you made a bow and arrow. The bow and arrow is a weapon. Or you made finger guns. We don't promote violence. 15-yard penalty.
I didn't even know why there was a flag. I mean, they had to go back and show it. I'm like, that's what's wrong with that? That's a great celebration. I wish our guys would score so we could celebrate like that.
Exactly. And then, of course, they went to great lengths on TV to go. Greg Olsen wouldn't shut up about what a smart move by LaFleur to take it on the extra point instead of the kickoff. I'm like, yeah, duh. Why wouldn't he? All right.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else from you, Wolfie? Has your blood pressure finally come down after the loss on Sunday?
I was okay with the loss after it happened. I was okay yesterday. I stopped watching football. I just moved on with my day. I said, I don't want to see any more football for tonight. I'm going to do stuff around the house, get ready for work, all that. Today, the wife asked me how the day was going around 3 o'clock. And I said, honestly, I'm still grumpy about yesterday because listening to the radio and stuff this morning just got me all worked up about it again. And then the Facebook memes and all the things. And I'm still struggling with it. I'm going to watch the Bucks game here shortly, and hopefully that'll go swimmingly
and
move on. But
all right. So I like to call that the post-loss emotional boomerang, where there's a dip. The anger is really high Sunday night when your football team loses either in horrific fashion or to a team they should never lose to. Then you get into work Monday, you're doing things, and it dips down. But then, like you said, all the memes then start flowing and more information comes out and you start to get angry all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite meme of yesterday, and it was just encompassing Jordan Love going forward or as he's been and going forward, they said, Jordan Love doesn't throw very many interceptions, but when he does throw an interception, it's the worst interception you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that is just to a T.
That's it.
It is every time.
And what I hated the most was that mouthy foot fetishist, Rex Ryan, got to Peacock today because he has been very anti-Jordan Love. And he's been big on the don't trust him thing. Okay. Have your moment. I still believe in Love. I think he's an excellent quarterback. I don't regret the Packers paying him all that money. That's the price of a quarterback. A lot of teams would love to have that guy. But, yeah, some of the interceptions make you go, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, I don't think they're using the offense correctly. And I think that's everybody's frustration with it. And sometimes you have to pass to open up the run. And that's clearly the case. It's what worked in Pittsburgh. It's what they have to do. That's the style of gameplay. Get him in a rhythm. Let him do some things. You can't call on him on third and eight when you've ran the ball
right
16 times in a row. He's not going to make that pass.
Yeah. Run, pass tempo, open it up, and then gash him on the run. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Tempo passing, then run and gash. Okay. Well, look, I hope that beef prices come down. I think about you guys that run restaurants and pubs because, damn, price of steak be going through the roof.
Yeah, yeah. We're exploring opportunities with other meals and such as well. We're not just a steak place.
No, you're not. Look, there's still plenty of fish in the sea and shrimp in the Gulf and chickens roaming around. We have a lot of nice dishes, so keep those in mind, my friend. Keep them in mind. All right, Wolfie, you're the man, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
Let's end on this. Final scene, Caddyshack, golf course being blown to smithereens by Carl Spackler and his C4 embedded in the clay figurines, the crude clay figurines of little harmless critters, Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Squirrel. Danny Noonan's putt hanging on the edge to win the big cash match against Judge Smales. And there was Brian Doyle Murray, the caddy master, Lou, hunched down, hands on knees, just waiting, looking at the ball. Everything else is going on. People have forgotten. Oh my God, the course is blowing up. That's what he's focused on. I can't say that I've been focused on, per se. How did Connor Stallions get on the sideline of Christopher Newport? How did he get on the sidelines of Central Michigan? But it's the one question in the whole Michigan sign-stealing scandal that I've been most curious about. And sort of in a quiet Friday news dump, well after all the penalties have pretty much been doled out, it was reported what happened. Here's the reporting from Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. He tweets, "At long last, we've got the official NCAA explanation of how Connor Stallions wound up on the Central Michigan sideline in coach's gear. Four ex-staffers have been punished, including a two-year show cause to Jim McElwain, head coach, for his responsibility in the incident." The NCAA report states as follows, "Unbeknownst to Central Michigan, Jake Costner, a former assistant football coach, had a pre-existing relationship with Stallions. Costner formulated a plan for Stallions to be present on Central Michigan's sideline during its September 1st game against Michigan State in 2023. This to identify and decipher play calling signals. Outside of typical procedures for item distribution, Costner asked Nate Mason, a former coordinator of athletic equipment and operations, for coaching issued gear. Costner did not provide a reason for the request, and then coordinated with Mike McGee, former director of recruiting, to provide the official gear and a bench pass so that Stallions could have access, whom Costner had provided an alias so as not to be detected ahead of kickoff." Now, does this sound like a sophisticated operation to you, or does it sound like amateurish, slapdash half-assery? Well, sure enough, McGee was unaware of whom exactly the gear was for, but he knew it was for a friend of Costner who was skilled in deciphering signals, and so he said sure. During the game, Stallion stood in close proximity to McGee and other football staff. Given his staff's direct involvement in the arrangement, Jim McElwain, former football head coach, now no longer coaching, is responsible for their violations under head coach responsibility legislation. Jim McElwain's never going to coach again, but if he does get a job offer from somebody, the school has to give the NCAA a show cause as to, well, really? You sure you want this guy? It's almost as good as a death sentence for a coach, a show cause order. Some have overcome it, but you better be really good. McElwain, not so good. So there it was. Just a bunch of kids, almost like a Scooby-Doo episode. Oh, Zoinks, Scoob, it's the hotel owner. He was using this ghost costume to scare away the customers so he could bankrupt the hotel and collect on insurance. So, like, we got him. Bunch of kids just going, hey, let's get some gear. Let's let this guy on the sideline, where you would think enough coaches would be like, who the fuck are you? You're in Central Michigan. I mean, Central Michigan is not USC. I get it. They're Division I, though. You would think there'd be enough people, enough checks, enough meetings, enough guys to go, hey, who are you? That they would know, or a guy would know a guy who didn't belong in the sideline. And you would think you'd have to have the exact correct sideline gear. I'd imagine it probably changes slightly from game to game. Don't even Division I teams have different polo shirts or pullovers, like colors and whatnot? You're not just wearing anything with a Central Michigan logo, and yet somehow, well, somehow it eluded everybody. It was the Sergeant Schultz defense from Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. Well, good job. We have final closure on that, and I will make this the final closure on today's podcast. A little different than usual. I'm starting to rope in some other satellite friends of Zabe and people who I think are interesting, and we'll see how it goes. I appreciate the feedback. Even if you're like, nah, these guys ain't it. Remember, it's their first run with me, okay? They're a little bit nervous. They don't want to disappoint me. So I'm just trying some things out here. Let me know what you thought. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have yourself a fantastic Tuesday. Thank God the political ads are finally, mercifully over. And we will see you next time.
You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.